This episode brought to you by Own the Gray podcast. Discover how others age with attitude at ownthegray.ca.
Welcome to another episode of Lunch with a Healer. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Hoffman. My guest today, Karen Tiden, has an almost supernatural ability to understand and hack the mechanics behind people's subconscious patterns and create new and better strategies in life, fast and tailored. She's a multi-award-winning coach, active in over 25 countries, and one of Europe's sharpest in her field. She's helped thousands of people to maximize their potential and is often seen as the coach's coach. And she is also the author of Mind Hacking for Rebels. Today, Karen gives us several mind hacks that are very simple and useful to create more balance in our everyday lives. And here is my conversation with Karen.
The best conversations happen when we're having lunch with our friends, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair and join us to expand your knowledge and open your mind.
Welcome, Karen, to Lunch with a Healer.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
I'm very excited to have this discussion. Why don't we start with you introducing yourself?
Yes, of course. So my name is Karen and I live in Sweden and I am a hypnotherapist and a coach, and I try the best I can to help people to remove blocks in their lives as fast as we can so they can live their life fully or more fully.
Well, that's a wonderful introduction to what my next question. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Your book is Mind Hacking for Rebels, which is a wonderful title. And I'm going to ask you how you came up with that. But also, I'm intrigued about your journey. You must have gone on a self-healing journey, I would think.
Oh, yes. It's a long journey and it's still there. I'm still a work in progress. So it started when I was very, very young. I had a very narcissistic father and my mother was emotionally shut down. And I was also born into a religious family. So there was, so the family in itself was very dysfunctional. My father, a little bit like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, he could be nice and playful. And then 5 minutes later, he could become Mr. Hyde and he could be very, very cruel. And my mother, she kind of just blended into, you know, the furniture. So she was very shy and she was very invisible as a support. So we lived also by a lot of strict religious rules that you have to obey God and you have to be a good person and you have to live a very good life in order to finally get to the goal or the finish line, which would be some kind of paradise. And the problem there was that we never really knew how long we have to live like this. It was very hard to measure what was right and wrong and how did I do, because we didn't get any grades during the way. So it was always like living with this kind of uncertainty that, am I on the right track here? Am I doing it good enough? So all that combined together made me a perfectionist. So I thought that if I'm perfect, I will get to the paradise. If I'm perfect, I will be all right. Nobody can hurt me. It took me many, many years when I was a professional. I worked in television. And since I was a perfectionist, I was really good at it. You know, I did my job. My bosses could always trust me that I did my job in time. But then finally, I almost hit the famous wall. And I started to realize that maybe I need to change something. So I started slowly to read some books and I started to go to a psychotherapist, a little bit talking about myself. And then finally, I realized that in order for me to release all these old habits I had, thought patterns, locked in emotions, counterproductive behaviors, I really had to go into the matrix. I had to go into my subconscious mind, because it's like a big library or hard drive with everything you learned and everything you experienced. It is kind of directing your day. About, I think they say that about 90%, 95% of your day is directed by this hard drive. So I understood that I have to do that. And I always been a little bit rebellious. So I started to rebel quite early. I was a really good girl. I didn't rebel, obviously, but I had a rebellious spirit of some kind. So even if I was obeying the laws and I was very respectful of my parents, I noticed that about 12 years old, I started to feel that all this is wrong, but I couldn't do anything. So I had to wait until I was 18 years old where I could leave and make my own decisions. So after growing up, I really come to terms with that. Okay, I am a little bit of a rebel since I was a very young age. Sometimes a very outspoken rebel, sometimes just in spirit. And this rebel has kept me going to finding new ways and better ways to live my life. So I'm very grateful. And I do love to be a rebel, because that means that I don't accept everything as the truth. And I don't accept that everything other people do is the right way. I dare to try new paths and new ways to do things. And often I end up in a much better place than I thought I would, you know, reach. So I like this kind of rebel thinking.
Agree. A rebel, or even some people would just call it curious, but you have to have one or the other in order to search.
Yeah. Or maybe, could it be so that being curious is one of the traits of a rebel?
It could be. Your story is very intriguing. So you read some books, you did a bit of therapy. Was there an epiphany? Was there a moment when you just knew you'd, we never figure it out, but you were closer to knowing how you were to heal yourself? Or did you have a coach facilitate your healing?
Yeah, I think it's a blend of everything. So I talked to a psychotherapist for a little bit, but I felt that we were just going round and round and round in circles. Since I'm very curious, I just continue to know that this is not good enough. I need something that is stronger or better, or something that goes deeper. So at one point, someone told me, "Have you tried hypnosis?" And 12, 13 years ago, I started with hypnosis. But when I tried hypnosis the first time, it's about 15 years ago, in Sweden, we all thought that hypnosis was something you did on stage.
Right.
And you made fun of people and you made them laugh or do crazy stuff.
Right.
So I said, "Well, no, I'm not that interested." And she said, "But why don't you try it?" So I tried it once, and it didn't work very well. And then I said, "But okay, I try it twice." And I changed to another hypnotherapist. And hypnosis was quite new in Sweden at that point. So I tried one, and he was really good. And I got the real experience of hypnosis, what it can do. And he explained about the subconscious mind and how it works and how it dictates most of your day and everything. So I think that was a turning point when I realized that not hypnosis per se, but more reaching the subconscious mind, because you can do that in several different ways. So reaching the subconscious mind and finding the reasons where I have this kind of feelings or behaviors or thought patterns, that was the key. And then I started to go to hypnotherapists, and then I just blended with different methods So I went to someone, and then when after a while I felt, oh, I will try this over here and I will try this over there. So it's a blend of everything.
Until you developed your own techniques that you're now teaching people. And then at what point did you write the book, Mind Hacking for Rebels?
Yes, I wrote a book in Swedish about 2 years ago. And it came about because I was holding a lot of seminars before the COVID and everything. And people said that, okay, this was really interesting. I didn't know about the subconscious mind and how it directs our life and everything. So do you have a book about it? Because I would love to bring it home to my partner or give it to my daughter or to my boss, or I wanted to explain to my friends. And I said, no, I'm sorry, because really I'm not a book writer. But I decided that I would love to give it that to my audience. So I pushed through and I wrote the book, and a couple of years ago it came out in Swedish. And last year now, in I think it was October last year, I got a connection in the U.S. and we decided to release the book in English. And the next year it's going to be in China, in the Chinese market as well. Mainly, I wrote it because a lot of people needed to understand how it works, because I love the idea that there's nothing wrong with you. It's just that the matrix or the programming is wrong. So when I meet my clients, a lot of them is saying that, what is wrong with me? I'm stupid. Why can't I change this behavior? Why do I think like that? I know that I don't have to be afraid of this and that, but I still am. So they blame themselves a lot. I did too.
Yeah.
But if I say to them that there is nothing wrong with you, it's just the matrix in you or the program in you. It's like an old computer program that is not updated. So it's wrong. And that's a good thing, because that we can change. It kind of makes them feel a little bit better.
Absolutely. We're going to dive in now to get eventually to your mind hacks, a few of them anyway. But first, you've already talked about the subconscious mind. Why does it become even more destructive as we mature into adults?
Well, if you think about the subconscious mind as the library that keeps score of everything, and also it's protecting you. So it wants you to get love, respect, security. So when you are born into this world, as a baby and as a toddler, you'll learn really fast, what do I need to do in order to be loved and safe and connected? So that's why I think the old Jesuit priest said that, give me the, I think also was Aristotle that said, give me a child before the age of 7 and I will give you the man.
Yeah.
So the first 7 years, I call that for the download period, where you download all the rules for living in this world. What do you need to do to keep safe, be loved, connected, and everything? So you do that. The problem is that when you grow up, these programs and strategies that you have in order to survive and be loved and feel safe can become counterproductive. So let's say, for example, if you're a small kid and you're in school, you need to go to school, you have to go to school, and you have friends there, or you have school buddies. You need to feel safe there because you're going to go there every day. So what do? Maybe you people please and you try to be like everybody else in order to feel like a part of the group and feel safe, and you can go to school every day and nobody will bully you. That's totally normal, and that's what kids do. But if we fast forward this like 30, 40 years, and now suddenly you are in a workplace, and you do the same thing. You just people please, and you do a lot what everybody says, and you try to be nice to everybody, and you don't have any opinions of yourself. That could suddenly become a blockage, because maybe your boss is saying, well, I don't think we're going to promote Karen Right. Because she don't have any ideas of her own. She never speaks up. She don't have an opinion. She doesn't move forward. She doesn't take charge. And suddenly that is not good for you. So you don't get the job, or if you want to promote yourself, you don't get the promotion. And the problem is that it's often building on time, over time. So if you are a people pleaser as a child, a little bit to be safe in school, that's totally okay. But then you do it when you go to maybe to the university, and then you go to a job, and then suddenly you just add on and add on layers of it. And that's when it becomes destructive, because suddenly you are people pleasing everywhere, all the time, with everybody. And then suddenly you have no will of your own, you have no mind of your own, and maybe people see you as a weak person or a very shy person.
And everybody has been programmed in a slightly different way, because they're being programmed from their parents. Everyone is different, so we all have different issues. What you do is you help people rewire their brain.
When I work with clients one-on-one, I can follow the process very closely, and I can see what kind of mind hacks do they need in order to change or rewire the brain. So sometimes it's just, you know, talking, sometimes it's releasing emotions, sometimes it's change the perspective, or to understand something at a deeper level, to reframe how they look at themselves. So we can do that. But the most important thing is that as a therapist or a coach, you just work with them, you know, once in a while, maybe one, two, or three times a month, the most. So you also have to give them a little bit of advice or mind hacks that they can take home, because they have to practice. And a lot of people, when they come to me the first time, they have a belief that I should just snap my fingers, put them into hypnosis, and the problem is gone. And sometimes that's true. We can just put them in hypnosis. We find the core issue. We find the fear, and we can basically just rewire the brain right there and then. And they are letting go of years of guilt or of fears or something. But I would say that it's more towards the other way. You know, you have to work on them for a while, and you also have to give them mind hacks that they can use at home, because they need to train that muscle. So if you are afraid of something, if you are afraid of speaking your truth, being authentic, I can't just say here when you're with me that tomorrow you will be authentic, but I can help them to rewire on a deeper level. And then I can hopefully give them some advice that when you go home, I would love for you to talk to that person, train with that person to say, to speak your mind, say what you need to be said. And, you know, and they get a little bit scared, but I said, it's normal. You have to do it anyway, because after a while you will overcome the fear. But what I can do in a session is I can lower the fear. So instead of having a fear level of 10 going in, talking to their boss or their partner or their friend about a difficult subject, we could maybe push the fear down to a 6 or a 4. So it will be more manageable for them to do it, but they will still feel a little bit of fear. And actually, I do that too. If I'm going to have a difficult conversation today with someone, I can still feel a little bit fear in my stomach.
Right. Because it's a lifelong evolution. It's years and years of this. So yeah. And that's comforting for your clients to know that we are all continually working on it. What modalities do you find most helpful?
I'm going to give you the complicated answer, or maybe it's the easy answer, because it depends on the person.
Okay.
So I noticed that the problem sometimes with workshops and books is that it's general advice. And that's really a good start to begin with. But after a while, we are all different. So I know I have a client, she's really into fast cars. So the most relaxing thing for her, it's to put herself in her car, driving out in the countryside, driving like crazy on small roads. And everybody's like, wow, aren't you scared? It's crazy fast. But she gets so relaxed of it. She empties her mind and she's just there in the car with good music and the nature, and she's driving very, very fast. If I have told her to meditate, she would laugh. Exactly. And she said, that's not for me. I kind of meditate, or I'm in the now when I'm driving fast in my car. Nice. So that means that I try to get to know my clients a little bit as a person, so I can find out what kind of mind hacks would suit them the best. So for someone, it could be journaling. For me, it's not journaling. Oh my God, I've tried that for several years, because all the famous coaches said that that was a really good idea. Yeah. And I bought notebooks after notebook after notebook. And I bought the most beautiful notebooks. Yeah. And I was sitting there with a good intention every day. I tried mornings, I tried lunches, I tried evenings, and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I came to peace with myself. And I said, okay, Karen, journaling is not for you. So instead of blaming yourself, saying that, oh, Karen, you are not good enough because you're not journaling, even though this great famous coach is saying that this is the best thing, instead find what you need to do. So that's what I do with my clients. So for someone, it could be meditation, journaling, breathwork. For someone is being in the garden. For someone is working on their car or playing some tennis. So it doesn't matter. As long as you feel two things, that you feel joy afterwards and you feel some kind of peace within yourself, then you know this is the right thing to do.
Is that what you felt and still continue to feel once you went through your own healing journey?
Yeah. So I can say like this, sometimes when you go through a healing journey, it could be really tough.
Yeah.
I've been crying my eyes out. I have days where I felt like it's useless. I've lost hope on life, on myself and everything. So I'm not going to say that it's happiness and peace all the time. But after a while, it's like cleaning the attic or something. That's suddenly you start to see that it could become something of this. You started to see small signs where it seems to be a little bit cleaner, or there's a little bit of light or a little bit of calmness. And what I did is that I started to notice what that was. So if I felt this feeling of a little bit spark of joy or a little bit of being, calmness or being centered or something, I said, okay, what did I just do? What made me feel like this? And it could be something often very, very small thing, very simple, didn't cost a lot, didn't took a lot of preparation or time. And I try to do that more often in order to balance out sometimes the tough days. And then eventually it builds a strength within you where you feel that there are more sunny days than rainy days, or more sunny moments than rainy moments during a day.
Okay, beautiful. Throughout this, have you felt more in touch with your intuition as the years have gone by?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. I would say that the road to a good intuition is to work on yourself.
Yeah.
So I am highly sensitive person, which means that I already am a little bit sensitive. I'm taking in a lot of information all the time. But what I noticed is that when you have a lot of unprocessed emotions within you, like fear, anger, and other stuff, they cloud the intuition. You can't feel it because it's like the signal with the intuition signal is very, very subtle. So if you have a lot of negative emotions going around in there, you can't hear it. So clearing yourself out is the best. It's like cleaning the window. To get the sun in through the window, you need to clean it. So this is the same way. So today, when I work with my clients often ask me, are you psychic? How did you know that? Just the other day, I had a woman, she was, I had a session with her, and in the middle of, or in the beginning of the session, I just asked her, your dad, is that your biological dad? And she said, yeah, why do you ask that? And she looked very strange at me. And I said, okay, no, it was nothing. I was just uncertain. And then we continue, and 30 minutes in, she got a revelation that her dad is not her real dad.
Really?
Yeah. And she heard it from her mother and her father.
Okay.
They were arguing a lot, and she was just a small baby, right, and a toddler. And the mother often said to the father something about, you are not her real father, you shouldn't decide, you know, a little bit of that. She heard that as a young girl, but she was so little, she didn't understand what it meant. But that it's stored in the subconscious mind, and it kind of pops up. So she felt like there was some within her about the truth and about something. She couldn't really put a finger on it, not feeling good enough. And of course, it came from that.
Right.
So, and she said, oh my God, you're right. My father is not my biological father. Wow, that's why I feel this and that. And so she could connect the whole matrix, the whole picture. And she was so happy about that knowledge because that perspective changed everything for her.
Yeah, she got clarity. Wow.
She got clarity and she needed that.
Yeah. You've written about becoming vulnerable.
Oh, yeah.
Discover your authentic self. I agree. I think that's really important, but it's a concept a lot of people don't understand. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, I did actually have a client today earlier that told me that he was really closed off. He had a wall and he didn't like to be vulnerable at all. And what we found with him is that he was working when he was about 16, 17 years old. He worked at his dad's restaurant. And when he made a mistake, his father would yell at him. And there was one specific event when he was serving dinner to a family there, eating at his father's restaurant. And they had a young woman or a daughter that was his age. And, you know, they were a little bit like flirting with each other. And he was looking at her and she was looking at him. And he took the order and it was wrong. And his father came out from the kitchen and yelled at him. In front of this girl that he wanted to impress. So his father basically humiliated him in front of everybody, and specifically a girl that he was a little bit interested in. And that was the moment he closed down. Because like he said in the hypnosis that, okay, so being vulnerable like this, it's like being humiliated in front of everybody. So his brain had connected some kind of humiliation and vulnerability was kind of together, and that was not a good thing.
Yeah.
And he cried a lot, and finally he could feel the humiliation. I could help him move through that emotion and you know, go strong out of it. So I think that when we don't dare to be vulnerable, and I have been that myself, I'm still working on it, but I'm so much better today. I think that when we don't want to be vulnerable, it's because stuff happened when we were that didn't feel good.
Absolutely.
So maybe someone bullied us or our parents yelled at us in front of, you know,
yeah,
on a party or some, and it happened repeatedly.
Yeah.
So we felt like being vulnerable is standing there in the light with all the shame.
Yeah.
For everyone to see.
Yeah.
Because that's how I felt with my shame. Because when I did something wrong, I was forced to beg for forgiveness in front of the whole congregation.
Oh my.
And they punished me by saying, oh, Karen did this and that, and now you can't speak to her for 1 week.
Oh my.
Because she did this and that. And I was just quite young. So it was small, innocent mistakes, you know. But, you know, the problem was that I feel that I had to sit there in front of everybody and they looked at my shame and they look at me with their shame on you, Karen.
Right.
And that was, I know that that was a big turning point for me, that I didn't want to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because it was so awful to sit there in front of all these people feeling all this shame.
Right.
So for some people, it's not like that. It's just the fear of not being good enough or being wounded or hurt. I get that.
Yeah.
But for some people like me and my client I had earlier today, it goes so much deeper because you've been treated so badly and you've been picked on or you've been publicly humiliated by grown-ups and sitting there with your shame.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a huge concept. You could honestly do a whole podcast just on vulnerability.
Yeah, we could.
You know, yeah, but you coming on podcast, writing your book, exposing your authentic self is probably maybe a little bit cathartic for you to be able to be vulnerable. It's
yes, absolutely. Nowadays, I would say most of the times, 9 of 10, but yeah, there are still situations where I don't feel comfortable being vulnerable, but I know that and I'm aware of it.
Right.
And I'm still working a little bit on it and pushing myself to be more vulnerable. But like you said, there's also a very cathartic feeling of not, I don't have to hide anymore. And the shame releases itself when you notice that people just nod their heads and say, wow, that was brave, or, oh, Karen, I can relate to that. I felt that too. And you feel that you're not alone. That's a beautiful feeling that everybody else is also nervous about exactly making mistakes and being vulnerable.
Exactly. All right, yeah, let's talk about some positive things. Can you give me a few simple mind hacks?
Of course. Like I said before, I have a difficult time just generalizing because, like, okay, I said, I need to know the person. But there are a few things that you could do that is really good. So, for instance, one hack is that when something or someone is triggering you, you often react really quickly. You become scared, you become angry, or something. So the best way to stop the reaction is to start to expand the window between what triggers you and your reaction. So when you react immediately, your window is very, very small. So what I have trained myself to do and what I train with my clients, it's to broaden that window. So you have a couple of seconds from you get triggered, someone is saying something to you or doing something to you, and your reaction. What I do to expand that window is that I take a couple of very slow, deep breaths. Why? Because it calms down the nervous system. And it also helps your prefrontal cortex, this part of the brain where you can plan and think ahead and think logically. That one pops into place and start working again. Because when the emotions and the nervous system gets crazy and overwhelmed, the prefrontal cortex in the brain shuts off. And that's when you just react and you say things that you maybe regret the next day. You say too much. So I always try to think that, okay, Karen, take a couple of deep breaths just to get your brain to start working again. Right. And then I always ask myself and I ask my clients to ask themselves one question. And that question is, at what do I need to do here in order to leave this situation being proud?
Good.
And you could change that word proud to something else, because sometimes it could be a situation where you need to stand up for yourself.
Right.
So, of course, you can say, what do I need to do in order to leave this situation feeling proud or feeling protected or feeling strong or feeling fulfilled?
Heard,
right. Brave. So you can have any word there that you feel suits the situation and just allow the word to pop up in your mind naturally.
Okay.
So that gives me, so the breath, a couple of breaths, it could be 2-3 if I have an opportunity, I do more, but often it's not more than 2-3 of them.
Right.
And if you don't want to do it in front of the person, like you need a really like deep breath and so the person looks at you, I do it like more internally, like I slow down the breath and I breathe with my nose so it's not that visible for the other person. And then I just ask myself, what do I need to do in order to leave this situation, you know, like proud of myself or seen or strong or anything? And then I act in the way that I know that when I leave the situation, I can be proud of myself, or I can put my head on the pillow, you know, in the evening, feeling satisfied of the day that I handled the situation in a good way or something like that. So often it's also good to know that when someone is triggering you, often you don't react as the wiser grown-up self. Often it's the subconscious mind just sending up a reaction like maybe a more immature version of yourself, mm-hmm. that haven't been thinking through what need to be said. You just want to protect yourself. You just want to be right. Or something that is a little bit more childish or immature, I would say. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's good to stop, take a couple of breaths and ask, what do I need to do in order to leave this situation being proud of myself? Because that could break that immature behavior and say, I can choose something that is better in the long run and it's going to make me feel better. And with that, you start to expand the window between the trigger and the reaction. And finally, you will notice that it will be much easier to do it. It will not happen overnight, but right. Something, a lot of things seldom do. It takes to train a little bit on it. Another thing I do is that I realize that success, it's not a comfortable procedure.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So you have to put pressure on yourself. So to create what you want in life, you need to be willing to experience its opposite.
Yes.
So in order to create something new, you need to be willing to feel uncertainty or a little bit of fear. So a lot of people say to me that they want to be successful, but they want it to be an easy road.
Right.
They want to feel strong. They want to feel confident. They want to feel brave. And they come to me and they say, oh, Karen, please, could you help me feel braver and stronger so, you know, so I can do this? And I said, well, I can help you a bit on the way. But you also know that when you are leaning into unknown territory and new things, you will feel a little bit of fear. You will feel a little bit of uncertainty. And if you want to learn new stuff, you have to be willing to feel a little bit dumb in the beginning that you don't know anything because it's a new area and you don't know anything. And I used to take the very easy example that if you want to have a stronger body, you have to start exercise and you have to be willing to feel a little bit weak and sore in the body because it makes you stronger in the long run. So what I do is that I ask a lot of my clients to follow the Wim Hof method. I actually trained for him and I've been on some of his trips and doing these really cold ice baths.
Okay.
And why they are so good at doing, you may be not able to do ice bath, but you can take a cold shower every morning for a minute. You right. don't start with a minute. You start with like 5 seconds and maybe you just shower, you know, you cough or your foot and you start to move in slowly and you extend the time. So until you reach at least a minute. It's so beneficial for you physically, but it's also so beneficial for you mentally and emotionally, because what you do is that you are training your nervous system to stay in an uncomfortable situation.
Right.
And that strengthens the nervous system over time, so it can more easily be in uncomfortable situation mentally and emotionally out in the world as well.
Wow.
So it's actually the cold showers are training your nervous system to be uncomfortable, but stay in that, stay put, and you can take that outside. So I have a lot of clients saying that since they started with these cold showers, working themselves up to 1 minute or sometimes two, they don't shower the head, they just shower the body. And they said that they actually become braver, more bolder, and better at dealing with uncomfortable people and situations because the nervous system can handle it. So sometimes you can train yourself from, you know, top down, with things for the brain and the thoughts and everything. But you can also train yourself from bottom up, doing things for the body and the nervous system that will affect the brain and the mind.
Fascinating. You're talking about the shower part. Not necessarily
the cold exposure.
The cold exposure, not necessarily sitting in ice cold baths for a while, but just a cold shower at least to start. But are you also teaching them about the Wim Hof breathing?
Yes, I'm doing it. Absolutely. The problem is that sometimes that breathing exercise doesn't fit all people. So sometimes they will do it and sometimes don't. But like I said before, I try to know the person.
Right.
And see if breathing would be a good match for them and if they want to do it. Because breathing is also regulating the nervous system, helping the nervous system to cool down. So when you go into difficult situations or stressful situations, you can calm down your nervous system easier and faster because you can breathe the right way to make your body calm. And when your body becomes calm, your mind becomes calm. But sometimes you just have to see what fits the person. And sometimes
right.
you just have to add a little bit here and then. You can't just, you know, heap it over them, everything at the beginning, at the start.
All of this is in your book?
Yes.
If I was to ask you what your message is to the world, what would you say?
Oh, I would say that what we talked about before, that there is nothing wrong with you. It's that just that you have a bad programming, and that's a good thing because that we can change. But it requires a bit of work, but it's worth it.
Absolutely. Where can my listeners find you?
Well, they can find me at my website, karentiden.com. So I have it both in Swedish and in English. And if they come into the Swedish website, there is a little flag up in the right corner that you could click on and you get the English version of it. And you can find me there, you can book sessions, and you can just email me if you have a question. Okay. And if you want to start slow and find some tips, you can buy the book on Amazon and I think some other places.
All right. All of this will be in the show notes.
And thank you.
this was really a great conversation. I want to thank you so much for spending some time with me today, Karen.
Of course. My pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share it with your friends. And join us next time for Lunch with a Healer. Now you can share your thoughts with us. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are all welcome. Go to speakpipe.com/lunchwithahealer and record your message. Try it out today.